Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this free podcast from Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and like and listen to your podcast wherever you pick up your podcast feed. You can also subscribe at theCelticUnderground.substack.com, where you will get email notification of new content as soon as it is out. And you can subscribe for free. There'll be plenty of free content, articles and podcasts. But also, you can pay a small subscription and you'll get extra special content. Anyway, enough of me. On to today's free podcast. So welcome to this week's Celtic Underground podcast. It's just myself and Stephen. We were just talking before we came on. Actually, Stephen and I haven't been on a podcast together since Stephen's been doing the podcast. And we are recording this just under 24 hours after the epic victory over Motherwell. And I did my wee monopod last night. And so... I've had a bit of a say on it, although obviously now 20 hours to reflect. Even you've not, so where do you want to start? You start. You tell me where you want to start on this game. Do you start at the end or do you start going through the game?
I suppose you could do it all in the one hour. Like, the game was typical Celtic this season. Like, you know, it was the roller coaster ride. You know, it was just not getting into the game. I thought Motherwell started very well. They're a very well coached side. I think everybody knows by now that I'm a big Askew fan. I think his team playing the best football in the league. They started well, but then we did come back into it, and actually we'd had a few chances. You know, there was a couple of cutbacks that weren't quite right. I think Tenekte had won. Did Alistair Johnson have won it? You know, there was a couple of chances that, you know, we were still getting chances. Ironically, the made the goal came. I thought we should have had a free kick, and I was shouting for the foul when the ball just broke and Dyson smashed it into the back of the net. So, like, you're going in then at half time. Penalty shout was before half time then as well, wasn't it?
It was just before half time. Penalty shout was just before half time because I was raging all of half time.
Yeah, but whatever way you look at it, he got clattered. If that happens anywhere else on the pitch, I was in a pub in West London last night watching it. I was down in London for a meeting today. And everybody was of the view that if that happens anywhere else on the pitch, it's a foul. So why is he allowed to clatter him in the ball? You know, and there was this, you know, the usual goalkeepers get too much protection. You know, Engels probably should still have scored. Funnily, I think if Engels had scored, they'd have found a way to disallow it or something, or they would have done something. But anyway, we didn't get it. You know, ironically, it wasn't the only penalty we got to talk about last night. Then, you know, get into second half. Yeah, you know. Second goal's a good goal. We looked to be kind of in command. I thought Nygren had done nothing. I just posted on the WhatsApp, like, he needs to come off. He's terrible. I'd said it to a guy sitting beside me in the pub, like, we just need to get him off. And then he scored. But other than that, he didn't actually do anything. Not as close to you on the view on Nygren, but I was getting closer to it last night as I texted, because he really did contribute nothing. And then, you know, Motherwell, I thought the subs messed us up a bit. You know, somebody was saying that today, and I think Ross had posted something in the chat, and somebody else would come back on it, and the subs really messed us up. We kind of lost our shape. Suddenly, they got back on top, but that's been a feature of Motherwell this year. They don't seem to stop. They seem to keep going, and yeah, nobody was surprised when they equalised. We had the two tellies on, so I had, like, the Hearts game was to my left, and the Celtic game was directly ahead. So you could see what was happening in their game. And that way, you know, you think, oh, shit, you know, we're going to need a 3-0. But actually, them going 2-0 or 3-0 didn't make a difference. You know, we were still going to need to win 3-0. Yeah, and then the penalty. And yeah, I think it's been over-talked about. I think you'd almost due to have a statement on the news at 10. Or, you know, like, Gary Lineker's getting involved. Everybody's getting involved. It was a penalty. He handled it. You know, and that's it. Whether you like it or not, and it's, you know, it was a penalty. I didn't see it. I was claiming for the elbow. I thought he kind of came through the back of Trusty, which, again, you're not allowed to do. And I thought he was giving it for that. And then when you see the handball, you think, well, fair enough, it's a handball. And I genuinely don't know what... there have been worse penalty decisions made this season, but then none in the seventh minute of injury time in a game that could decide the title. And I think that's what all the fuss is about.
Yeah, I mean, on the Maeda penalty, so I was at the game with a group of people in hospitality. It's weird hospitality, actually. I tried to convey this in the monopod that I did. It's right at the back of the Davy Cooper stand. It's like, must be really good double glazing, because you genuinely are struggling to hear anything in the pitch. So it is like being in somebody's living room watching a game on a big screen. And so you're a bit removed from the passion of it. But it was right in front of us, the first penalty claim with Maeda. And all half time, I cannot comprehend. And there's a guy in our group who's a trainee ref, and as refs do, he's defensive of the referee. And before the game, we've been talking about the Alistair Johnson incident against Rangers. And I said, look, you thought Alistair Johnson was a red card in the game? Yes, said. And why did you think that? Well, I said, because he won the ball. Yeah, but it was his follow through, and you can't, you know, whether you win the ball or don't win the ball, you can't take the man out. Right, okay. So you said before the game that Alistair Johnson was red card because he takes the man out even after he's won the ball. I said, well, the goalkeeper takes Maeda out before he's won the ball. Okay, it may be in the action of winning the ball, and it might have been a second after, but I appreciate goalkeepers coming for balls. They're high up in the air, they're using the hands, so rules are a wee bit different. But he took Maeda out before he touched the ball, before he controlled the ball. For me, that should have been a stonewall penalty. But on our penalty, again, like you, so I'm at the game and the TV's up behind me. And so but of course the TV's like 5 or 6 seconds behind what you're watching. But you're trying not to take your eye off what's watching, because you could be watching the TV and miss it. So I'm looking at the TV and I'm saying to the other guys, I think he's elbowed him. He's elbowed him. He's elbowed him. I think he's going to have to go to the telly because he's elbowed him. So when he goes to the telly, I can't hear. In the stadium, they said it was a check for handball. I couldn't hear that. My gut feel now, having watched bits back, I think VAR looked at it for the elbow.
Yeah.
And in the process of looking for the elbow, it would be interesting to hear what the VAR audio is. Yeah. I think they've then said, wait, I think it might be handball.
Yeah.
And if Trusty doesn't go down holding his head, they might never have looked at the handball.
Yeah. But the handball is less contentious technically, isn't it, than the elbow? But it isn't, you know, because as we've seen, you know, the last 24 hours has just been mental. Like, I was in London today, and I, you know, because everybody's suddenly got an interest in the Scottish League for a change, because there's a story this year. And the story's that we've not been good, but then, you know, Hearts is a positive story, as is Motherwell and Falkirk. You know, Celtic and Rangers not being so good is a story. But having a comeback with Martin O'Neill is a story as well, which people like, actually, because most people in England kind of like Martin O'Neill. You know, he's popular guy down there. It was funny, I had one of the guys in work who's a Tottenham fan. He was saying, I saw your celebrations last night. He said, after watching that, I really want Celtic to win the league because it just looked amazing. Whereas half the other boys were like, oh, I can't believe you got that penalty. It was terrible, blah, blah, blah. But then they hadn't watched the replays of it. They've only seen, you know, when it's presented a certain way, you've got McInnes is on. You know, McInnes shouldn't have said what he said. I think he's really wrong for what he said. You know, McCoist is on his usual spouting shite. But like, he's best disregarded. I don't buy the cheeky chappy routine, never have done. We know what he is, what he always will be. You know, then you've got the Heart, the Foundation of Hearts issuing a statement. Well, they're the majority shareholder in Hearts, as far as I know. So that's like Desmond coming out today and saying the referees are cheap. Celtic would be done. Celtic would do that, would we? I don't see. So why are they, you know, if Tony Bloom had said it, he would be censured. So why are the biggest shareholder allowed to come out and say it. And it's all about putting pressure on for Saturday. We know what's happening.
And that's one of the, I mean, Andrew Smith in our WhatsApp chat, he made the point that he was once, that Celtic were once fined because the Celtic View described Terry Hurlock as the hammer thrower in chief, because the Celtic View is the official communication at the time, the official communication vehicle of Celtic. So
wasn't Tom Boyd pulled up on something as well recently for what he said on Celtic TV or something? I'm sure there was something.
And the odd thing is, I understand, but it's not even their game.
Yeah. So
Derek McInnes is commenting on the refereeing performance. On the same night, he's commenting on the refereeing performance of a referee in a game, in a different game, that took place at the same time as his game was going on. So he's not had a chance to watch the whole game. He's watched a couple of playbacks of the penalty. He shouldn't be commenting at all.
He's kind of showing himself up there, because I think it was funny. I saw a couple of things on the huddle board last night. It was like the Askew thing, and some folk were, you know, I don't want him anywhere near the Celtic job if he's complaining about that decision. And then the other school of thought was, well, you want a manager that actually, if that happened against us, we would probably moan about it. Just because you do, and your manager backs your players in the immediate aftermath of the game. But then when you go away and watch it, you might say, do you know what, actually, I watched that back. I might not have been right. McInnes is doing that. McInnes is in a microphone stuck under his nose. He's been told Chris Boyd is raging. He's taking it as gospel. You know, Hearts are talking about decisions made in the last two rounds of fixtures. Well, there's been 37 rounds of fixtures. You know, Hearts got three decisions at Ibrox that led to Russell Martin got sacked.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's talking, you know, when Shanklin handled the ball and scored, Hearts got a VAR penalty. Rangers got what looked like a perfectly good goal disallowed. But nobody's talking about that. Because that doesn't, you know, that doesn't fit. And I think McInnes is trying to do the Alex Ferguson siege mentality, everybody's out to get us. I just don't think he's clever enough. Do you know, that's why.
And the fact is, they're absolutely not out to get them. In fact, quite the opposite. And I understand why. You know, wrote a piece on the site today about, I fully understand why, if you are a commentator about Scottish football, football journalist, whatever, even if you're Celtic-minded, but you're supposed to be writing these neutral articles. I can imagine how you run out of ways to say Celtic are brilliant again and win the title again. So I can see how you can be enthused about the ability to write about Hearts. I mean, as I say, it was like Radio Jambo when we eventually got back in the car after the game, and they were devastated, utterly devastated.
But they should have been. I feel a little bit sorry for the Hearts players, because they've gone to Tynecastle, and instead of McInnes being out, and but you know, they've won 3-0. It's the last home game of the season. They've had a great season. They've not lost a game at home. Hadn't lost a game at home all season, which is, you know, pretty strong record. And he's talking about, instead of him, he should be praising his players, and he should be going on about how his team have taken it to the last day. What an achievement that is. Instead of saying we've been, he's almost giving his players an excuse if they don't win it now on Saturday. And that's a dangerous thing to do, because, you know, so, and we've done it a couple of times this season as well. We've had, you know, players giving excuses, and, you know, the manager wants us to run around too much. You know, I thought a lot of that during Nancy's time in charge, although he was mental. But I don't think the players done the best job that they could have. I think they let them down a little bit. That, you know, that's a different day's discussion. But what you're doing is you're giving these guys an excuse. And instead, you know, McInnes could have said a lot of that inside. It's like O'Neill, when O'Neill came the first time, we all remember when he was out saying that, you know, Rangers are the benchmark and, you know, we want to catch up with them. Meanwhile, the speech before the 6-2 game was all about, we're much better than them, we're going to go out and battle them. It's about sort of positive reinforcement for your own team rather than putting the negative stuff in. As soon as you put the negative mindset in, I think that will backfire on Hearts, hopefully. What is he a hope to achieve? Because all eyes are going to be on the referees at the weekend, and VAR means they can't actually cheat. And whether you think they're cheating or not, actually, the more you look at it, more often than not, I would say 9 times out of 10, VAR gets the right decision. They don't get it perfect, but it's the same in England. Do you know, but I think it's better having a poor version of VAR than not having it at all, personally.
And on the McInnes thing, I mean, again, and looking round at the telly after 15 minutes of celebrating, and into shots of Tynecastle at full time, and everybody looks devastated and gutted. And now, you're right, for me, McInnes's job at that point is to lift everyone and say, fantastic result for my team today. People, you know, if you want to play the everyone's against us card, you could still do it by the, I'm sure everybody thought, coming down to the wire, that they would buckle under the pressure. But you saw today how they thrived on it. They won 3-0. It's an incredible result that we are going into the last game of the season, still top of the league. Brilliant that we are doing that. And if somebody raises the Celtic game, you just say, I'm not interested in other teams. I'm focused on my team because it's in our hands. We are going into this last game of the season, top of the league, knowing that a draw or a win secures the title for us. We are going in the last game of the season knowing that if we secure 1, 2 out of 3 possible results, we've won the league. That's incredible. And what a brilliant result today, and blah, blah, blah. That's how you do it. You don't even mention that. And as you say, I understand why he's doing it, because he's thinking, I want to put the pressure on. But actually, see, if he was smart enough, he'd have been aware that everybody else would do that job for him.
Yeah. He doesn't need to. You know, I would just hope O'Neill comes out and does it tomorrow. It's going to come up at the press conferences tomorrow, isn't it? Danny Rowe tried to be smart earlier on in the year, talking about the Celtic game when they weren't playing. You know, O'Neill's well capable of putting them back in his box. You know, you can talk about lots of decisions that didn't go for us. You know, if you look at, you know, the two games that, you know, point swings for us under O'Neill, when we lost to Hibs, and when we drew the Hearts, those were down to red cards. Actually, you could argue we're not the right decision. Did they need to be re-refereed? But there's no point still going on about them now. They happened. You can't change it. You know, you could argue Celtic have been badly disadvantaged by VAR this year. Every club will find a reason to complain about it. Absolutely. And that means it's probably working okay. Because if nobody had a complaint about it, you know, it is what it is. And I just think McInnes has done the wrong thing. It's almost like he's auditioning for his next job. Because let's face it, there could be a vacancy coming up, October, November next season. Does he want to be going for that job then? I don't know. The Rangers fans would love him. And particularly when he comes out with that sort of nonsense. They like all that. You know, he's calling it like it is. He needs to call out the SFA. And fine. Do you know what? I think Hearts could easily replace him with a much better manager who probably would have got him over the line already. You know, if you go down that route, but we'll see. You know, it's still very much alive.
Yeah, one final thing on the Motherwell game is to talk about the Motherwell tactics and ask you, watching it in person, that there was an Ange element to it to me in terms of if the right back was in difficulty, he pings a big diagonal across to the left midfielder who's way out wide. And that, you know, he's out on his own because we're towards their right back. So that drags us across, getting back to my issues with Negrin. Because he doesn't close anyone down, it then means as we are going across, they then have a man free in the middle of the pitch because we are a man down all the time. So they have a man free in the middle of the pitch and they can play it into him. And suddenly, in just two balls, a big diagonal across and then in the middle of the park, they're turned, they're facing us. And I just thought it was great. But I messaged you earlier today. Apparently the stories about him going to Toulouse are pretty accurate.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it might even be a done deal. So that's where he's off to.
Yeah, I fear it will be an opportunity missed for us. If he is going to go and he's not, you know, I'm glad. I'd have been very worried had he ended up at Rangers or at Hearts. So I think he's got, you know, the ability to to do better with those squads of players than he's done with Motherwell. You know, he's got, you know, you were talking, the number of teams last night, you know, I'm watching it with my mate who's a Celtic fan, but he's a more general sports fan as well. Like, you know, so he watches a lot of football, a lot of every sport. He's not as into Celtic as the rest of us. You know, his thing was like, there was big gaps in the middle of the pitch all the time. And as you said, they were switching the play. We didn't seem to respond to that. There was a couple of times, like McGregor got back and made a great tackle once on, I think it was Just, was coming through. Yeah. McGregor had been burned by him in the middle of the pitch. He shouldn't have actually got past him. I thought, you know, I've watched Elijah Just in about half a dozen games, maybe more this season. He's just a fab player. He's just a lovely footballer. You know, he's just intelligent. He doesn't look much to him, and yet he seems to have a bit of a physical side. He puts in a few tackles. He picks up bookings. If you compare him to Negrin, he contributes a lot more to the team than Negrin does. Do you know, if you're using a like-for-like comparison, you know, and they've got a number of players like that all over the pitch that are definitely, you know, overachieving on what the profile of them shows up like.
And the other thing, I know Sananthri on our site has not been impressed with Kieran Tierney this season. I think it's more, he's been expecting the young Kieran Tierney, and not this one. But there's been a few times of late once Tierney's gone off, and I like Sarachi, and I think he's a good attacking option for us. But there's been a few times where once Tierney's gone off and Sarachi's been on, we've looked in danger. And last night, once Tierney went off, I mean, I don't know whether it's compounded because it's my aider in front of him, but once Tierney went off, they were just ripping us to shreds down our left-hand side, and the goal was coming.
The game changed with the subs, not for the better. They made better substitutions than we did. So their subs got them back into the game, whereas ours, obviously, Inacho wins us the game. So you could say that actually our sub changed the game as well. But he hadn't contributed much up until then either. Well, even if you compare it to what Maeda does in terms of keeping them pushed back. There's such a lack of options in the team. Like everybody's talking beforehand, who do you play left midfield? Do you play Jamesy Forrest and you need to switch Yang over? Do you put Maeda wide? We just don't seem to have another option. It was almost like Tenekte was the default, although most of us didn't think it was going to work. I don't think anybody, when they saw the team, said, yes, Tenekte's on from the start. He's going to make a big difference. And yeah, he was okay at the weekend. He done well when he came on at the weekend.
But he's okay as a sub. He does okay when he comes on as a sub, and he's very poor when he starts a game. So the penalty itself, before we move on to previewing the Hearts game, the penalty itself, once it's given, do you know, I'm amazed. I mean, obviously, I did the podcast at the beginning of the season, well, it may have even been the end of last season. No, it was last season, with the guy who's written the book about penalty kicks.
Yeah.
And interesting podcast, and it's a really interesting book. One of his big things is when you've got a penalty in open play, you get, and I don't know that we had people in our coaching staff under Brendan who read that book. And I know someone read the book and gave it to Brendan, and Brendan said, right, you adopt this. And the one time we didn't use the system in that book was the penalty shootout against Aberdeen in the cup final last season. But you can see it, and one of his big things is the penalty taker stays away when all the hassle's going on.
Yeah.
Somebody goes and gets the ball and stands on the penalty spot to protect it, right? So we've now had a number of penalties. I am still amazed that I'm listening. Radio Scotland played back the penalty, and you get packed. They're still talking about whether their Scales got the ball and they stand on the spot. Is Scales going to take it? And you think, you're a pundit. You are paid money to give insight, and you do not know the absolute basic of how we manage a penalty kick setup.
Even guys in the pub were saying last night, they said, oh, there's Scales. Scales is protecting the ball. He's not happy. Even, as you say, like, people know that's what you do. And you see that in European games. You see that's what teams do. That, you know, you don't have Arsenal. That's what you do. And I thought Scales was brilliant because Scales is good at that anyway. He's good at being a bit of a, you know, in the mix. And, you know, his footballing ability is not up for discussion here, actually. But in terms of, you know, a teammate having other people's backs and being in the middle, he is fantastic at that. I can't knock the boy. Like, I thought he was great last night. That was very well done. And you could see what was happening. Motherwell players were all losing their head, which I kind of understand as well. Do you know, I don't have an issue with that. Even during the game, Any decision that goes against you, you will appeal, even if it was correct. You know, that's just your sort of natural instinct to do that. And I've coached at kids' football. I managed to get myself sent off twice for complaining to referees or maybe complaining a little bit too forcefully and stuff. But you will always make your views felt. You might be afterwards, you might go, yeah, do you know what, actually, you know, when the kid, when I'm moaning it wasn't a penalty, and the kid said, actually, Steve, I touched him. Fucking hell, why didn't you tell me? But you do. Yeah, we managed that very well, and you can see there's an element of, and we have been good at penalty. The only time, you know, we messed it against Aberdeen. I think a lot of that was Schmeichel unable to go the one way, and Aberdeen had watched that. And then against Carrigan, against Almaty, we didn't seem to know what we were doing there either. We didn't seem to be, although I didn't actually watch that shootout, I was standing outside a pub in West Wales waiting for our dinner, and I could only get it on radio something or other, so I was listening to it, and the phone nearly went in the sea. So, yeah, it's been a long season when you look back to that was the start of it.
Yeah.
And if you think all the things that have happened since then.
It's amazing, but also just you touching about football. I mean, I always find it funny when a footballer kicks the ball off and then sticks his hand up, and you think, like, you don't. I know you're trained to claim for everything, but honestly, don't. Just don't. Apparently, I've not heard it, but apparently on the Open Goal podcast, Andy Halliday says afterwards he's spoken to the Motherwell players, and the guy who handballs it for a penalty, can't think his name off the top of my head, he's not sure if he touched it with his hand or not. Right, what does that tell you? It means he touched it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because any player who didn't touch it, Andy Halliday would be saying he's absolutely fuming.
He's adamant because he didn't touch it, yeah.
Yeah. Because what he said was,
he was apparently... He was a player, wasn't he, the boy that done it?
He was. Because apparently what he said was...
Yeah,
he wasn't sure if he handballed it, but it was Trusty, his arm was in a position, and Trusty made him move his hand up above his head.
Yeah. Even though Trusty was in front of him. I don't know how that happens. No.
So,
if there's another Celtic player behind him shoving him in, I could see that line of defence. But it doesn't work when the guy that shoved you is in front of you.
But when you've got the guy who did it, is his defence is, I'm not sure if I touched it, and anyway, he made me put my arm up in the air.
Yeah.
It's a penalty. I mean, it's just crazy that it's been so. But anyway, and have you seen Donovan in with the supporters coming out and grabbing angles?
Yeah, having the crowd go mental, yeah.
Yeah, and he came onto the pitch and everything. So actually, because of where we were behind the thing, it wasn't absolutely clear that that the referee had blown the final whistle. And to be fair, not all the players were behaving as if we'd won, that you could see.
Yeah.
The ones that were in amongst the fans, they were in there. But other ones that were further away, it wasn't obvious. And then I see Beaton pulling the officials together and sort of being ignored by everybody as they go off the pitch. And for a moment, I'm thinking, is he claiming that he can't finish the game here because of the supporters?
Yeah, I thought, somebody said that when we were watching. Somebody said, is he abandoned the game here? And then we realised he'd get you.
So, but that was just my paranoia at the whole event. But it's funny because you're thinking to yourself, you're persuading yourself that a draw is okay. You get into the last minute, you're persuading yourself, oh, it's okay. You know, because we need to win anyway. Even if we'd won, we'd still need to beat Hearts. So we just, you're persuading all these things.
You need to win by more, yeah. So
on to the Hearts game on Saturday. How are you feeling?
I've said all along, one game at a time. So I have said, you look at it at cup finals, if these were games we had in a cup final, would you fancy that you can beat this team to win it? And to be honest, all of them I did. You know, and if you look at it, I think Motherwell away and Hibs away, in terms of the support not being there, you know, a smaller amount of our own support being there, they've been harder games, as they turned out to be. You know, we got over the line eventually in both of them. Rangers game took care of itself. I thought we were, that's as good a performance as we've had all season. It's probably the one I've enjoyed most. And it wasn't just because we beat Rangers. It was because, we played with a bit of swagger. There was a bit of joy about the place. It was like Celtic should be. And I think when you come into Saturday, so if you're thinking, well, if we're playing Hearts in the cup final at Hampden, neutral venue, split support, you'd fancy us to win. We're playing at Celtic Park. We're going to have, what's their allocations, less than 1,000, is it?
Yeah, I think it's 800 or something.
That was the decision they made. You know, they went down that route of cutting other, we've all had this who started the thing. Everybody wants to cut our allocation, and then when we do it back, that's not fair. You reap what you sow, guys. Well, I'm sure Hearts would love to have a bigger attendance there tomorrow, and we would have loved to have a bigger crowd at Tynecastle. That's just the way it is. But if you said to me at the start of the season, going to the last game, all you have to do is beat Hearts, I'd have taken it. And I think we'll beat them. I don't know what the score will be, but I just think we will do enough to win. I'd love if we win 3 or 4 nil so that it kind of takes away the, you know, you say, well, look, we would have beat them that much anyway. But obviously we wouldn't, because it's, you know, all of those things have a knock-on effect.
Yeah, because one of the things for me, I mean, firstly, of all the split fixtures, actually the one that I had most concern about was Motherwell away, in terms of getting a win. And then the difference of we just need to win as opposed to we need to win by 3 goals is the difference it makes to Hearts.
Yes.
Because if we are needing to win by 3 goals, Hearts might be more defensive from moment one. And maybe that might have suited us, because they would have sat in, and then if we'd have got the second goal with 10 minutes to go, they wouldn't, you know, very difficult for them to do anything. Equally, and I suppose this is one of these you can persuade yourself either way type things, if Hearts need a draw or a win. So if we go one up, Hearts need to score.
Yeah, they need to come out, yeah.
And that might create even more space. Like you, someone was speaking to me last night saying, so what are you wanting for Saturday? I said, I tell you what I want, or what are you hoping for Saturday? I say, I tell you what I'm hoping for, is we don't concede first. We get a goal inside about 10 minutes. Another goal round about 20 minutes, and then a third goal just before half time with a goal maybe. And they're saying, do you think we'll achieve that? And I was like, no, but if you're asking me what I hope for, I would like as stress free as possible. I mean, even 3-1 up at Rangers, although they weren't creating anything, you're still nervous because you think if they manage to get a goal and get back into it, I just feel our defence, it feels very fragile.
But I've always got that. I remember the 6-2 game. Was it we were 3-0 up, then they got back to 3-1?
Yeah.
And I remember panicking that they were going to get back in the game, even though we were absolutely destroying them. And that was just because you'd always been used to, we'd had a generation of, no matter what we'd done against Rangers, we never seemed to get it over the line. We would batter them, Tommy Burns teams, regularly battered, you know, and then they would, you know, Loudrop would score or McCoys would score or something, we'd go against it. So you have that mentality. Yeah, you know, so even at Saturday at 3-1, but then there was a bit, you know, it was a bit like, there was a spell, it was a bit like watching Ange's team. When Ange was in charge, like when Rodgers was in charge, we knew we were going to beat Rangers, but that was mainly because Rangers were a very poor side. You know, whereas Ange was playing against, you know, Stevie Gerrard's doped up Rangers side, and then he had, you know, Van Bronckhorst, who's a very good, capable manager. So, you know, Rangers, for 2 seasons, had a very good side in context, you know, to the ones that Rodgers had been up against, certainly in his first term. But, you know, that, you know, when we beat them 3-0 under Ange, there was a couple of games under Ange where we just pulled them all over the place. That's what Saturday seemed a bit like. It was almost like, yeah, this is, we're back. We're not winning on penalties or getting it in extra time. We're back. This is sort of proper order again. We're the better team and we're showing it, which we haven't done all season. We didn't do much. You know, if you look at, you know, last year we lost to, you know, Barry Ferguson's role, which is just inconceivable when you think about it, losing to that moron. But we did. But it didn't matter. But it always matters, doesn't it? And Saturday, I think, really mattered. Or Sunday really mattered, and we showed that it really mattered. Yeah, that was a positive. And I think if we take that into the game, we were never going to take that into the game last night, because Motherwell is a different team. It's a different thing. And although it was a different team that had went there and lost 2-0, it was a different manager, it's still in the back of your head. There were still some of the players that played that night, so they'll have a bit of mental scarring about it. But you know, there was a bit. I remember when I was coaching the kids' team, we lost 8-0 to one team. We'd goalie cry and we'd everything. It was terrible. And then we played this team again, and I hadn't told the boys we were playing them, because I thought if I tell them, they're going to be worrying about it. So we turned up on Saturday morning and it was this other team. We played three games, like three 20-minute games. And a couple of the boys were like, oh, shit, we're playing them again. You know, we played them the last day. Two of the boys hadn't played. Well, they didn't beat us 8-0. And we ended up getting a draw, which was one of our best results at that level. Because this side were really... And their coach gave them a bollocking that they didn't batter us again. And it's like, well, you didn't credit my boys for... And that's what you do sometimes. You've got... You know, there's a lot of footballers in the head. It's psychology. You know, Askew's been really good at that this season. He talks about, he references Bodo Glimt. You know, maybe that's what Martin's really good at, the mentality side of things. Because mm-hmm. You know, we all look and see maybe the tactics aren't right. We're not sure on the subs. We're not sure. But one thing you can't fault O'Neill for is the mentality. And I think he's not giving players excuses to not win games.
I mean, in relation to the substitutions, I do think one of his challenges is the squad's a bit short. And
it is.
He's obviously looking at Alistair Johnson's been out for so long that he's maybe not quite ready for 90 minutes, so he's coming off. Tierney, obviously we've decided, a bit like Andy Tom back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
We've obviously decided that Kieran Tierney is a 75-minute player in games. The problem, obviously, you've got is you've now got two fullbacks who are 75-minute players in a game. And also, he patently perceives that Ian Atchell can deliver something for Celtic only when the opposite and James Forrest, but only when the opposition's a bit tired.
Yeah.
So he's playing Maeda, he's playing Yang, and then you know it's almost like he's just picking somebody to fill that third position. I mean, personally, I wouldn't mind if he tried Hatate in the same principle as how he did with McCowan. If he tried Hatate as part of that three, and then did the, you know, Ian Atchell and Forrest on, everybody's a bit more tired. Yeah, Maeda goes round to the left, and Yang over. And
yeah, I think Hatate probably gives you a bit more, and maybe that, you know, I've seen people suggest, well, why don't you play Hatate where Negrin is and push Negrin out wide because, you know, and give, I don't know. We've got one game to go. It's almost, it doesn't matter now. We just need to go out and find a way to get over the line on Saturday. You know, and it worked against Rangers, whatever we've done. You know, even in that first half when, you know, McCowan, I felt sorry for McCowan because it was like, I think you guys were talking in the podcast, McCowan was trying too hard and everything he tried didn't, the ball bounced. I thought, you know, the goal that they scored, he could have got a foul for that. He was given fouls for that elsewhere on the pitch. It would have been soft, but he'd given that the other way. But then you look at, you know, McCowan had, couple of moments of genuine quality. Like the goal he set up was just a fantastic, but we all remember the Jackie McNamara, you know, reverse pass and when we won the league in 98 against Rangers. Do you know, it was one of those, or was it McNamara, was it Burley or Lambert? Isn't it the game, the New Year game? Anyway, it was one of those reverse passes. You know, I thought everybody knew McCowan was going off, but I did feel sorry for him as well. I didn't think that, you know, there's other players have played just as badly this season, but maybe not in that game. But then Tenekti was great when he came on. You switch it last night and Tenekti was, he'd done nothing. Like, you know, Stevie was on the chat. We were about 10 minutes in and he wanted to put a contract out on Tenekti. And I kind of get that. Do you know, it's... And he's not a footballer.
I think there was a period there when Tenekti was regularly coming on as a sub and looking like he was making a difference. Round about New Year time, and I think that's the problem. I think he does make a difference when he comes on because he's got pace and he can run at people. Frustratingly, he wants to cut in too many times, but he's got pace. And in the last 60 minutes of a game, when it's a bit stretched, bringing somebody on who's got that level of pace is a killer in Scottish football. But I think your point about we've come this far and it's just one game, I think as a consequence, we can all pick the start 10 of the starting 11 right now.
Yeah.
Because I think Martin and Sean and Mark Fotheringham are just in the mindset of this is our team. We're just going to get
there's
this team across
place
the line.
Up for discussion, isn't there?
It's the place that Tenekti started, McCowan started, Tenekti started, you know, in the last three games. And that's just it. As I say, for me, I would maybe even try Hatate to get that extra body in the pitch.
Osman's not made the bench yet, has he?
No, he's not, and I know he did. You know, he has been playing and training, but no, he's not. I think that would be a big game.
Yeah, yeah. To chuck him. He's not going to do that. He'd be a good guy to have on the bench, but I don't even know if we need him on the bench. You know, it's not. Yeah, it's maybe not the time for that now.
I know who's not going to be in the bench. Adamu, Nvuka.
Yeah.
And all our January's. All our January signings. It's just.
I think if Vanchara was still there, he would probably be playing at the moment, or he'd be on in and around the team. I didn't actually mind him. I thought he at least appeared to contribute something. But he was, when he came in at first, you know, the game against Hearts, when he set up that goal, I thought, oh, this guy's going to be brilliant. You know, he's like a modern day Chris Sutton. He's going to add something to us. And then he just hasn't been. You know, he can't finish. He couldn't get. You know, he could never seem to get a bounce of the ball in the 6-yard box that really, you know, you look at Iheanacho's goal against Hibs, where he just had a little chest, puts it up in the air, and it took about 10 minutes to come down. He had all that time in the world. He's got that composure in class. Vanchara never had that.
Yeah.
You know, and Adamu, I thought, could be good as well. He had a good, relatively good profile. You look at guys, but then it just shows you shouldn't be buying guys that are warming a bench somewhere else that aren't getting a game. You know, so I think if we'd went from Maswanizi in January, who's not been exceptional second part of the season, but he would possibly have contributed more than any of those four. You know, he'd have done something. But then
I think the challenge in the January window is nobody wants to sell in January.
Yeah, of course they don't, yeah.
And the consequence is the only way to buy a player in January is to go way over the top in terms of what their real value is and go over the top. Now, there is obviously an argument we should have done that because it was worth it.
We could have.
But we didn't. And then the other option is you're going for somebody who hasn't been playing. And the reason he's not been playing is because he's out of form or whatever. So you're going for someone who's not been playing games and is out of form. And that's a big risk.
Yeah, because you then need to play him to get him into form, and we can't afford to do that.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but out of all the ironic, the thing is, out of all the signings we had in the summer, the guy, or in the season, the guy who's had the greatest impact, if you look at the stuff that went around, can't remember who it was that put it online today about last minute winners. The guy who's had the most impact is Iheanacho, because he's considering how little he's been in the team.
Yeah.
Last minute, he scored 96th minute penalty against Kilmarnock. He scored the 82nd minute goal against Dundee. He's obviously scored the penalty there against Motherwell, and although it wasn't last minute, he scored the winner against Hibs.
Yeah.
I mean, he's hardly played.
He's been massive for us, in fairness. He has been, his contribution. And it's just a shame that he doesn't have the fitness to play a full game. Because you would have a really good footballer then. But he's just, you know, I don't know what it is. You know, would we keep him for next season? Are we going to be able to get him up to speed? I don't know that we are. You know, and that's a call for somebody else, obviously, isn't it?
Well, so see, here's a question for you that somebody asked me today. See, my guess is that he's on some very low pay-as-you-play type contract with his injuries. Would you give him another year?
Honestly, wouldn't. But I don't think we can be fussy enough to say no. So at the moment, you look at the squad and the changes we're going to have, it's almost like extending Forrest and extending McCowan and Scales and whoever we can keep that can contribute, maybe you need to keep them. And then, you know, if you look at it, I suppose Angie's team when he started had a Yeti in the team.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, he played in a number of games, like, you know, until we could get rid of him. You know, and he's another guy that should have contributed much more, had the right profile, just didn't have the right attitude. You know, I think sometimes attitude of players is more important than their ability. You know, and that's something we need to get right with the next intake. We need to do something because we've not had a good window, not had a great window since Angie's first season. Okay, we brought in Alistair Johnson and Nicholas Coon after that, but actually, I don't think we made Although then you could look in some of the players we brought in. Was Oa a good signing? Just didn't get a chance. Ilka didn't get a chance. Do you know, were they better players?
Do you know, I think on some of those players, so Oa, I think, just wasn't ready to be a Celtic player, and we didn't have the space in the squad to give him enough game time to become that player. Laga Bielka is too slow. To play. In any Celtic team domestically is going to play with centre-halves up at the halfway line and teams who hoof the ball away and have a guy standing there to outpace your centre-halves. So Laga Bielka may well be, and Narowski as well, they both may well be very good centre-halves, but neither of them will ever be good centre-halves at Celtic because they just don't. Yeah. Same with Palmer, just he doesn't have the pace to be a Celtic player. And your point about it might be worth keeping him because of who's going to go, I was just going to quickly go through. Schmeichel's going.
Yeah.
Ben Arthur's going. Probably Sarachi's going. Araujo's gone. Ralston will probably go. Callum might well go. Arne Engels will go. Real Hitati will go. Paolo Bernardo will go. Oxley Chamberlain will go. Mvuka will go. Dyson will probably go. Balotwisha will go. Who?
Who's staying?
Exactly.
We don't have anybody left.
Balotwisha will go. In terms of who's in the squad, Adami will go. Chanchara will go. And then we've got players who are out on loan, but they're still technically Celtic players. So you've got Louis Palma, Norovsky. I mean, it's huge turnover. So there might be an element of, let's just give him an extra year if we can get him on a low-cost pay-as-you-play, because we might just need that body, particularly Champions League qualification.
He genuinely seems to be happy to be there. He's one of those guys, some footballers can be quite sulky and if they're not getting a, you know, like Hatate doesn't look happy that he's not getting a game, for example. I know we're all body language experts now, and there might be nothing in that. That just might be the boy's personality. But actually, when you watch Iheanacho on the bench or when he's warming up, he's in the game. He's excited. He's, you know, when Maeda scored that goal, the overhead kick goal against Rangers, Iheanacho was over the... I've never seen him move so fast. Do you know, he was genuinely delighted for his teammates. And he's delighted for the guy that is in his position. Well, that's a good sign, I think, for a player. And he's probably a good guy to have around the squad. I'd imagine he seems a larger-than-life character. He's very much a glass-half-full kind of person. He will be brilliant in the dressing room, particularly with younger players. If you're thinking Callum Osmond training with him, you know, and the experience he's had, that's got to be a positive for him, hasn't it? So even if you've got next year that, you know, you've got a better striker, and then you've got Iheanacho and you've got Osmond, and those are your three choices as your striker, that's maybe not that bad. Do you know, if the striker we bring in is of the right level, and that's the challenge, isn't it? It's getting that one right, rather than whether Iheanacho's right or not. You know, you don't want Iheanacho as your main guy, but if he's only doing 20 minutes, 30 minutes, you know, if you had him to bring on against Keira Amati, he might have got us a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Or he might have scored the penalty that put us through. That's the difference, isn't it? That marginal difference. And lots of teams we've played in Europe in the past where Malmo had the guy Berg up front, who was the older guy that was in his 30s and he didn't play full games. A lot of these teams seem to have an older player that brings a bit of experience to the squad. Maybe he's that guy.
So we shall see. So back to Saturday, just before we go, I will get, what's your team going to be and what's the score going to be?
Okay, the team kind of picks itself, doesn't it? Sinisalo, Salo, AJ, KT, Scales and Trusty, McGregor and Engels, Negrin's going to be there as well. It's the front three. Maeda's got to start up top. Yang has to start. I'd probably start Jamesy Forrest. And I wouldn't have thought I'd have said, if he'd have said to me at the start of the season that I'd be wanting James Forrest to start in the last game of the season, I would have laughed you out of the room. But I think he's the best option. Forrest doesn't lose the ball. He does bring a bit of calm to things. And I think if you then get, even if you get 45 minutes out of Forrest, then bringing Tonechty on after that is quite good. So that's the way, you know. If I was picking a team, I'd maybe not start Negrin or Pay Attack, but that's what I think the team will be. And I think we'll win 2-0.
2-0. 2-0. What I don't want is us to be leading by a goal.
Yeah.
And going in the last 10 minutes.
We've seen that movie before. We don't like that movie.
I won't be in the cold with that. Nervous, yeah. Anyway, with that, I'm going for 4-0 Celtic. There you go.
Okay, well, I do like your over-optimism, but yeah. You're getting good. We have a guy down here, he bets on every game, and he's always got, like, he always has one or two big wins come up a season, and he shows that up. He never shows off the 10 bets in a game that he loses. Like, my son's like, oh, Dad, Den won again. I was like, no, he only shows you the ones that he wins. You're not gambling. My son's first bet when he was 18, and we said you can put a bet on the Rangers game, and he bet. I think he bet us to win 2-1. We were 2-0 up, and Rangers pulled one back. He was the only person in the pub that was practically celebrating the Rangers goal. He obviously didn't, but there was a little bit of happiness because he knew we were still going to win, but he was getting some money, and that was it. And he's not been allowed to put another bet on since. He was told, quite well, you're ahead. So yeah, but maybe 4-0 could be the shout. I think if it goes the way you said, the two goals in the first 20 minutes, I think we could murder them. I don't think it's going to be a back and forward kind of game. If it's 0-0 or 1-0, it could be cagey. But I don't think it's going to be a two team. You know, like the games they've had against Rangers.
Yep.
Like the 4-2 game at Ibrox, and you know, that have been kind of ended. I don't think it's going to be like that. You know, the game last night was a bit like that. There was a bit too much back and forward. We lost a bit of control. But yeah, it's interesting to see how they will set up. Do you know? Because McInnes is not. Is he going to come and try and win the game? I don't think he will.
No, because
game for a draw is really difficult.
Right now, if the game finishes after a second, Hearts have won the league.
Yes.
So.
And that's what he will be. It really, you know, it's all about, you know, there's going to be a lot of psychology. The press conferences tomorrow are going to be interesting. What's O'Neill going to say? You know, will other people be involved? Who are we going to send out? Which of the players? It's probably going to be Callum, isn't it? He's got to be there to call it tomorrow. It's interesting that Wilfred Nancy's suddenly in the frigging press. Is somebody going to get asked a stupid question about him? You know, the press back in Scotland. That's one of the things I've been kind of disappointed with, the whole fan media being banned. And I know some fan media can be a bit, you know, mad. What you miss is the chance for somebody like, you know, yourself or one of the guys from the Cynic or one of the 20-minute time guys. We'll ask a good question that will maybe put some pressure on McInnes that the rest of the media aren't going to ask. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to do that. They're not going to stir it up. You know, they'll stir it up at the Hearts press conference, but they won't at ours. They won't want to upset Martin. They're all scared of him and they all love him. So they won't ask something that might get him rattled. But yeah, I'd like to see him a bit cross tomorrow. But not too cross that he loses it, you know?
We'll see. It's quite incredible that we could go through the season losing 8 goals and win 8 league games and win the title.
It's mental. Like,
but
yeah,
with that, we will reconvene after Saturday and see where we're at. All right, Stephen, thanks very much. Cheers.
Bring me sunshine. In your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy. through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.